Let's remind ourselves where we're at. We've got this dev sports application. We've got three leagues, right? The FIFA League, the College League, and the NBA League. And what are these? In terms of a sports league, those are our domain objects, right? Those are the important objects that make sense for a sports application. The league, that's a core business object for this domain. So what we have in our training workshop here is the same application, and I want to show you that we've got a league.java file here. It's really just an interface to describe, it's really just a simple Java class that describes what information is the core domain. And what we've done is we've actually described the interaction with that core object through a service interface. We've implemented that service interface with a Spring Bean. Here you can actually see the Spring Bean. And this Spring Bean understands that its league object is responsible for managing also needs to be stored in a database. So this Spring Bean actually understands that it's responsible for using a data access object to store that information. Now, the persistence engine of choice that you can use in this example, and in most of the examples in this application, we're using Hibernate. And an example later this afternoon, we'll show you how to do it using Codo. And you can choose EDB2X beans, you can use Spring Data Access, you can go ahead and write your own JDBC. You've got complete flexibility about choosing what persistence you want to use. The goal of Spring is to make it easier for you to glue together the objects, the business objects that you're going to be using, not replace OR mapping. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. So what I want to do is I want to say, well, look, here's the Spring Bean information, but let's go ahead and take a closer look at where that's all registered. The WebLogic Workshop Studio has been extended to include a Spring IDE. What this Spring IDE does is it reads the application context.xml file and understands all of the entries in it. So in particular, if I want to take a look, where was that league? League service right here. Okay? Here is the league service. And you can actually see that this league service has, it's a Spring Bean, it has a property for the league data access object. So they're related. This is the application context.xml file in action right here. If I want to, I can go ahead and take a look at this, the actual bean class here. This is the thing we've already got open. Okay. Or I can take a look at the entry in the application context.xml file. Here it is. Okay. But this is, okay, you could have written an XML by hand. What's really nice about this tooling is that I can go ahead and say, well, look, not only do I want to know about this guy, I want to actually see some information about this guy. So in this tool, you're able to take a look at the relationships that appear in the application context.xml file and express them visually. So I can see that, sure enough, my league service does have a Spring Bean that's a league data access object. That league data access object's got two Spring Beans for relying on, a transaction manager and a data access object target. And that was used a session factory. This happened to be a Hibernate session factory. And that session factory uses a data source. You get to see visually how all these guys are related to one another. And it reads this information directly from the application context.xml file. Now, this isn't the only service, and this isn't the only Spring Bean in my application. In fact, I get to take a closer look at the entire thing. If I look at the whole graph, here I can actually see all of the Spring Beans I have and how they're related to one another. And I can see which Spring Bean corresponds to which attribute in the configuration for those Spring Beans. So this gives you the flexibility and control over your Spring Beans to stop them looking just like plain old XML entries. So let's return to the league service. What I'm really interested in taking a look at is some of the information about this guy. So, let me go ahead and open the configuration file. Here, when I'm looking at the league data access object, I can actually see that I've assigned it a property of transaction attributes. And this is the one that says, when you're interacting with that data access object, I want you to flag this guy for a transaction. I want you to wrap your method calls inside a transaction. And not just any old transaction, I want that transaction to propagate to subsequent beams that you talk to, rather than override them. So this transaction will now propagate throughout any string beam that this beam uses. That means you're insured of transactional integrity inside your string beam. And notice that for the string beam that I wrote, did I have to do anything special in here? Are there any extra exceptions I have to catch? Any JMD I look up for accessing the transactional context? Any kind of exception wrappering for JDBC exceptions or anything else? No, it's a POJO. Okay? That's what Spring does. It allows you to write POJOs and mark up all the infrastructure concerns and relationship concerns that you have for this Spring beam as extraneous information. Okay? That means this beam, this class file right here, could be reused in dozens of different situations, instead of having it tied to running just inside this application server. The low overhead of the Spring container actually means that I can have those Spring beams run in GUI clients, or I can have Spring beams run inside standalone desktop applications. You probably wouldn't mark them up with transactional attributes if you're not connected to a database, but you might choose other attributes like logging or control or security that you might want to mark up. Okay, let me show you a couple of other features for this Spring beam. Let me see. I want to show you that what we've also done for this Spring beam is we've actually taken the leak service and we've RMI enabled it. So, without having to change my Spring bean at all, I can actually allow remote Java clients and other JVMs to contact me. I do this just by adding this client context.xml file entry here that describes, yeah, sure enough, there's some client information, but here it is. I've got a bean, it's got an RMI proxy leak service name here, and you can see I'm actually utilizing the Spring framework RMI proxy bean. And in particular, the bean that I'm using is exactly this leak service right here. Okay? Now, I've created a client here somewhere. I'm just going to track the guy down. Here he is. And here is a simple RMI client that's going to go ahead and talk to that Spring bean. Let's see if I can run it for you guys. Run as a Java application. Okay? So, here you can actually see that the Spring bean itself, here we can actually see that this client has connected via RMI to the server, called the Spring bean's given back a list of the leak names. The warning here is actually overwritten the ether name, so you actually get back all the values here. Additionally, this means that, I don't need the extra work, I don't need the extra compilation step, I don't need the stub management that I may have had to have done previously for remoting business objects. All I've got that all contained as a simple interaction for these Spring beams. And these RMI interaction can take advantage of all the containers pieces for Spring. Let me also see that there's supposed to be a web service piece to this as well. Go down here. Where is this WSDC? There it is. So what I've also done with this leak service is I've actually gone ahead and web serviced the name of it. I've identified that this bean right here, where is it? My leak service is actually now going to be web service enabled. So not only do I want my bean to be accessed possibly remotely, I can actually have it accessed by a web service client. This means you can take your business objects and expose interaction to those by adding entries to simple XML configuration blocks. You don't have to rewrite the business object in tool in any kind of way. Now it's being used inside a web service. You just got to mark it up in the appropriate way. This web service, it means that you can actually set SOAP requests and send back SOAP responses. The configuration information and parameterized information for handling it is all included in this XML file. And I can actually show you, I believe I should be able to show you the web service in action right here. Sure enough, this is actually a request for the web service URL to get the WSGL document. And you can actually see the service list right here and the address that you would use to talk to that web service. You can get back exactly the same information we got back from our RMI call by using this lead service as a web service. You can build a web service client. You can be a client on another platform, C# or .NET, Perl, whatever. And they can go ahead and make calls into your application server to receive this information. Taking your business objects and enabling them for enterprise use has never been so easy as it has with Spring. Now, you might have heard me rap sing quixotic about Spring just for the last hour. That doesn't mean to say that EJBs have disappeared. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about EJB3, but we're going to focus our energy on persistence. So before we go there, I want to go ahead and just say a couple of things about EJB3. The emergence of open source frameworks like the Beehive Patrol, the Pogo-based, and the Spring Beans of Pogo-based heavily influenced the EJB technical committee. And what happened was they realized that, this was a much more practical way to do things. So you're seeing now the EJB3 standard, which should be ratified sometime in the near future. EJB3 standard is now also a Pogo-based programming model. And you do your markup for your POGOs utilizing Java 5 annotations. VA is committed to the Java Enterprise Standards. When EJB3 becomes a standard, we will provide EJB3 implementation. We will be releasing a fully compliant JEE5 container at some point that will contain and support all of these standards. So I don't want you to think that we've given up on EJB, but I want you to recognize that Spring and Beehive and other open source frameworks are actually influencing the direction of the Java community process in ways that are different than in the past. And in particular, Spring is already a ready-to-use POGO-based development environment with very good benefits. So I encourage you to check it out. You don't have to adopt it. There's nothing to stop you going away from your existing development practices. But it's got certain advantages that can be very useful for your application development. All right, I believe that is it for this section. So let me open the...